Welcome to another exciting edition of Chicago Bullseye. And as we approach the end of this unfortunate season, where it looks as though the Bulls will probably end up a bit short in making the playoffs, well, Mark and I have decided to do a series of podcasts that we hope you find entertaining. These podcasts are going to discuss, along the same lines as Superman versus Batman, we're going to explore rock icons, rock star icons, maybe some television and movie icons, and compare them versus each other. So in this episode, we have Bob Dylan versus Bruce Springsteen, a good friend of mine, Dan Swanson, who I played in the fantastic cover band for 3 years, approximately 1996 to 2002. On the south side of Chicago, you may have been familiar with our work at the time. But Dan was our drummer, fantastic musician, very intelligent guy, got me into a lot of great music. I really respect his opinion on a lot of things, and he's a huge Bob Dylan fan. So Dan in this episode makes the case for Bob Dylan, and on the other side making a case for Bruce Springsteen is Chuck Skrbacz, a really good friend of mine, very intelligent, very eloquent, and does a great job defending Bruce. And you won't find a bigger Bruce fan than Chuck Skrbacz. So he does a great job defending Bruce Springsteen. This is part one of their epic battle. Interestingly enough, Dan is a Bruce Springsteen fan. He really respects Bruce, too. And when I asked him the question, who did you think was better, he definitely, I think, would prefer Bob to Bruce. And he gives his reasons why he deserves slightly more respect than Bruce Springsteen. So really interesting conversation. I hope you enjoy it. I hope you guys find this this series that we embark on as the Bulls unfortunately probably miss the playoffs. Hope you enjoy it, and please provide feedback. Email me at chicagobullseye@gmail.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at CBEFred, at CBEFred. Dan Swanson owns a record store, and Dan's record store is located at 309 West Ogden in Westmont. Again, Record Utopia, 309 West Ogden in Westmont. Go to chicagobullseye.com. I'll post the information there. Check out, go visit Dan. Check out the great albums you can find over there. Talk music with him. Great guy to speak with. So tell him that Fred sent you. Until next time, enjoy the debate.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome again to another exciting edition of Chicago Bullseye. And for this first round, we're going to go first to Dan, who's going to defend Bob Dylan in one of these epic battles of the Titans, and we're going to determine based on listener reaction, who won this debate. So first, Dan Swanson, legendary drummer, owner of a record store. Very few minds I've met know more about music than Dan Swanson. Dan, let's hear you make an initial argument for why Bob Dylan is one of the greatest of all time and why he's better than Bruce Springsteen. However you decide to go at it, let's first talk about why Bob is important to you. Explain why he should be cherished by our listening audience.
Well, thank you, Fred. First, I would just like to say, who's Bob Dylan?
Okay. Chuck, your turn.
Well, in keeping with the theme of the podcast, let's discuss Bob Dylan and Bruce Springsteen, because I think that's what the listeners want. But anyway, Bob Dylan, I mean, he's a cultural icon. I mean, he invented modern songwriting as we kind of all know it. I mean, he's influenced everybody from the Beatles to Crosby, Stills, and Nash to everything. And the albums are iconic. Highway 61, Blonde on Blonde, Blood on the Track. It's just kind of a strange thing to have to defend Bob Dylan. I mean,
Dan, before we go any further, I think maybe this would be a good idea. Could you just give us a little, just a big Wikipedia picture in general of his career? Where was he really culturally relevant, the seminal albums? What you need to know from the start to the beginning, if you can do it in a minute or two?
Well, I mean, I guess that starts at the 60s and the folk movement and equal rights and all these kinds of things. Bob came out of that, but he's never been, protest. But he claims he's not a protest singer. You know, he's gone through so many phases. You know, you have the early kind of Woody Guthrie protest singer type guy who goes into the maybe druggy amphetamine kind of just a mile a minute kind of crazy lyric, really sort of strange and interesting, very impressionistic, to sort of like he kind of spearheaded the Back to the Country movement, kind of the after the so-called motorcycle accident that we all know didn't really happen. After Blonde on Blonde, he went into this kind of laid low for a while and just was real domestic and made real kind of back porch music, things like Nashville Skyline, John Wesley Harding. And then after the divorce, came out with Blood on the Track, and went into a crazy period of just classic 70s excess. Came out of that in 79 at the other end as a born-again Christian. He was a Jewish guy who becomes a born-again Christian, makes three consecutive Christian records, and then stays a Christian, but then goes back to pop and is kind of more of his classic singer-songwriter type of stuff. And then in the 90s, comes back, wins a Grammy for Album of the Year with the Time Out of Mind, and he's basically since then kind of gone from strength to strength, constantly reinvents himself, reinvents what he does, and does not care what anybody else. He's a legend.
Before we go over the Chuck on Bruce, I got one more question, which is, why was it, and I think this is one of the most interesting things about Bob, the moment he had with the band, which is, I think, depicted in that iconic movie, if you could give a little background on this situation, why was that received so poorly from such a vast, from such a large amount of his audience? He was a folk guy, acoustic only, and then he goes to play electric. Why was that such a big deal?
Well, the folk movement was so protective of him, and he was theirs. And, you know, if you followed anybody from the beginning, if you take your favorite band, whether it's Nirvana or Hall & Oates, and you were there at the beginning when nobody knew, and you walked into the store and you bought that first, or you saw Nirvana playing in a club in, like, 1989, you know, 5 years before Nevermind or something, and you walked in there, and they were, and you were, like, blown away, and you told all your friends, oh, my God, I've seen the future, it's Nirvana, and then, you know, all of a sudden they put out a big major label album, and all the world knows, oh, my God, Nirvana's the greatest thing, and then you're going to be going, like, you know what, they're dumb, I've moved on, you know, because everybody, they're not your little thing, and that's kind of what happened with Bob's folk movement. They were his thing, and he wrote songs for them, even though he says he never did, but he kind of did. That was his Woody Guthrie phase. He's kind of like an everyman, and he would sing these songs about, you know, war and the injustice of the labor movements and all this stuff. When he turned electric, he wasn't, you know, Peter, Paul, and Mary anymore. He wasn't this precious little Café Wa kind of folk singer that was real, kind of localized to New York and Greenwich Village. Suddenly, he was a rock star, and that's threatening to people that didn't want to be a rock star. They wanted him to be their little conscience, their voice, that pure guy. Basically, they wanted to stay their puppet, and that wasn't really in the cards for him, so he ticked a lot of people off, basically. And, you know, he got booed for it. The band Levon Helm quit the tour, like, a few shows into it because he just couldn't take being booed every night, you know. And he went back home, and the band carried on with a fill-in drummer, finished the tour, and they made history. It took a while for people to realize, well, this isn't going away. He just kept with the electric thing, and he just didn't care. It's like, I'm going to do what I do. I can't be who you want me to be or who you think I am, because whatever you think I am, I'm not that. That's the artist.
Chuck, over to you now. Chuck, I think the best way, there's few people I've ever met who I would declare a bigger Springsteen fan than you. I think probably let's start out, well, why is Bruce so important to you? What is it about him that's so great? And then from there, feel free to expound about Bruce's, you know, little wiki history of Bruce's career.
Let me start there. Thursday night, this week, I'm going to my 29th Springsteen show in Milwaukee. My wife and I are driving out there to see him, and I'm sure it will be iconic, as every show I've seen with him has been iconic. Most people will tell you, to understand Bruce, you have to be at a live show. Many of his critics, especially of his fan base, say the live show is, I don't want to say mesmerizing, but it's a religious experience for most of us as we go through it. It's hard to explain what that is. Now, he played last night in St. Paul, and he played 34 songs and went three and a half hours. He's the age of 65, and he's still doing that. And that is probably one of the reasons I've loved him since I was a little kid and started reading the back cover of that beautiful unfolding album, Born to Run, in my brother's room and read the lyrics to Backstreet's and thought, you know, this song really spoke to me. And I thought of a song like Backstreet's, which is so outside of Bruce circles, not celebrated. And it's, the poetry I read was brilliant. Now, I will say, Bruce Springsteen's pinnacle is probably 75 when he appears on both the cover of Time and Newsweek. He had made two previous albums, and the record company, which is Columbia, signed by John Hammond, who also signed Bob Dylan, sold him as the next Bob Dylan. That's how they were selling him. And if you listen to his first album, there's no question of the influence of Bob Dylan on the first album. But by the time we get to Born to Run, things have changed. And that's when he kind of hits his pinnacle in the 70s of probably jumping onto the scene. Of course, in the 80s, he'll re-jump into the scene with the second biggest album of the 80s next to Thriller, but what's a bigger album next other than Thriller, which was Born in the USA. And the 2 years of touring that followed Born in the USA turned him into a whole new cultural icon. And then arguably, his third big movement back in occurs in 2002, following the World Trade Center and the Rising, which I think very few artists could have written an album focused on 9/11 and not gotten criticized for it, which he did not, as cashing in on it, because in so many ways it was a healing album. And it was an album about the fallen heroes, and it was an album about America finding itself again. But let's start with this. I mean, first of all, Bruce has half the amount of albums that Bob Dylan does, right? Bob Dylan has 37 albums, I believe. Bruce is just, I think, at 18. 18 was Wrecking Ball. And that's not including the live stuff that's come out, too. And without Bob Dylan, there is no Bruce Springsteen. And I think we know that. And Bruce has said it, because Bruce inducted Bob Dylan into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And talked about how Elvis freed his body, but Bob freed his mind, and how important Like a Rolling Stone came on and his mother playing on the radio. But we can't confuse influence with greatness, and I don't mean to disrespect Bob Dylan at all. It's just, without Chuck Berry, there is no Beatles. But that doesn't mean Chuck Berry is better than the Beatles. But there's no question, in my opinion, that Bob is a better songwriter, because you can't, it's almost an impossible argument to make that anyone is a better songwriter than Bob Dylan. But his lyrics, he's more of a lyricist, I think, than a musician in the terms of the way he structures his songs personally. I don't think anything he's written, as great as so much of it is, approaches the majesty of Jungle Land or the raw rock sensibility of Born to Run or the intense natural sensation and energy of a song like Badlands. Let me just say this. Bruce is a writer for the everyman. His music is communal. It brings us together in spirit, and it doesn't stand apart from us like Bob's music does. It challenges us to understand its brilliance. It's often understated because he's singing in our voice. He doesn't speak to us. Bob speaks to us. Bruce speaks not even for us. Bruce, I would argue, sings with us. We feel like the guy at a bar in One Step Up. He says, there's a girl across the bar. I get the message she's sending. Or the husband who's so desperate as he's driving alone in his car, as I think you are right now, Fred, in stolen car, and saying, I'm driving a stolen car on this pitch black night. But the funny thing is, you can go to so many Bruce songs and find so much of yourself in different, and sometimes in the same song in different ways, whether you're down at the river, feeling like there's no place to go, with your girlfriend, or you come back from a night of boozing it up and racing the street to find your girlfriend looking with the eyes of one who hates for just being born, and suddenly you get it, and suddenly you're part of it. Whereas, I think Bob could write forever about, his brown-eyed son, and I think he could write great stuff that really gets you moving, but he doesn't speak to you like Bruce speaks to you. You can say the poetry is all in Bob, but Where else do you find a song that opens with "One soft infested summer, me and Terry became friends, trying in vain to breathe the fire we was born in, catching rides to the outskirts, tying faith between our teeth, sleeping in that old abandoned beach house and getting wasted in the heat." And I remember reading those lyrics for the first time and going, that guy's speaking something different to me. That was like a 17-year-old guy, you know. And then years later, I'll listen to Nebraska and I'll feel like a murderer. Anyway.
I'm willing to bet, like, most people are going to be listening to this just like me. I mean, this is what I kind of hope to get out of this, is that, you know, I respect both artists. I would not call myself a diehard fan, or maybe even a real fan of both artists. I like a lot of their songs, but I'm not anywhere near as knowledgeable about their careers or the seminal works that you guys are. So that's what I hope when everybody listens to this, you know, they'll hear Dan's case for Bob, your case for Chuck's case for Bruce, and say, all right, I've heard what they've said, and most importantly, what their suggestions are, because why do you listen to these podcasts are, you know, to spend some of your time to listen to them, also to find, and that's all we have, right, a limited amount of time, to take your suggestions on what are their best works and explore them and maybe find something in those, in that music. Before we get to that, though, I do want to have Dan maybe counter. You know, before we get to Dan, I'll state, I think Bruce is clearly the superior live artist. There's no doubt he seems to me at least more relevant today, although both of them have, their relevance has definitely diminished over the years, but I think he's still probably more popular today than Bruce, than Bob. But Bob is clearly, to me, the bigger cultural icon or pillar of what rock and roll is, just because he's been so influential and he's had a more of a cultural influence on American society probably than Bruce. Just my take. Dan.
Can I ask a question? I'm guessing, Dan, you've seen Bob Dylan live?
No, I have not.
And
Bruce,
have you?
I have not. Hold on, guys. I have not seen him live. So, again, I understand what Chuck, when you were saying that, are you saying, like, I felt this about U2. I wasn't a U2 fan. Really, I wouldn't call myself a U2 fan remotely. Like some of their songs, saw them live, and immediately I will always be a U2 fan for the rest of my life. Is that what your argument is, that if you saw them live?
Well, no, listen, interestingly, I'll argue that live, I don't think there's anyone right now in rock and roll. And I'll argue because I've seen U2 live, and I've seen so many live acts. I haven't seen Bob live. I've only heard some negatives coming out of a live Bob act, though, because, again, I think it speaks to what Dan was saying. Bob kind of speaks, but I think this is what hurts Bob in the long argument, which is Bob sings to what he wants to sing to. And I don't think, there's a certain sense of integrity to that, the fact that he has a certain vision and wants to follow that, and he's not necessarily swayed by the crowd and not necessarily swayed by the major financial pieces that you can get by being the preacher of rock and roll that Bruce is. And look, don't get me wrong, Bruce certainly makes plenty of money in doing what he does live and creating that atmosphere. But it doesn't mean that live show isn't the most incredible thing you'll see. It's a great experience. I will say this, I think Bruce is a little better lyrically, although I don't think his voice is greater, but there are certainly, to me, a lot more range. I think he's, again, a better live artist, and I think they have both grown in different ways, but I think Bruce is always, and I think they both have a lot of integrity in how they've grown. You know, Bruce, you know, coming up with an album like Nebraska after his first top 10 hit, he's never had a number one hit, and then kind of doing the same thing in the 90s where he just said, you know, I want to investigate into the ghost of Tom Joad and go my own direction, or I want to bring together the Seeger Sessions band. At the height of his popularity, he takes these weird swings and says, I want to do a live show just by myself on stage, or I want to record that way. So, but again, I think I'm kind of in the dance time, so I know Dan wants.
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of it. I saw Bruce on the Magic Tour, and it was fantastic. The energy level's going down a little. I mean, they are, you know, playing slower. I thought the tempos dragged a little, but the songs were fantastic. It was great. It was a lot of fun. But I don't like the idea of, like, well, Bob Dylan's better than Bruce Springsteen, and you know, I because I like both, you know. And when you were saying your thing about Bruce, you know, your name in the song, and I'm remembering the first time I heard those songs, the first time I put on Nebraska. And that Nebraska was the moment where I went, you know, because growing up in the 80s, you know, it was always like, all right, there was my brother's, who's 4 years older than me, his group were familiar with Springsteen, sort of, and it was like, it was something, it was theirs. And I didn't feel like it was mine. And then when Born in the USA came out, and it was everybody's, I mean, it just exploded. It was so huge. And suddenly, you know, Dancing in the Dark was like the biggest thing ever. And, we was on that huge run. And, you know, then it became like he was everywhere. And then, you know, people misinterpreted Born in the USA as like, hey, rah, 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 USA, isn't USA great? And, you know, you just get kind of into this whole, oh my God, it's just like tedious, you know, like, oh, here we go again, more Bruce, like, oh, God, Born in the USA. And then it wasn't until, you know, after that period and his divorce album, and then kind of going back, I remember, you know, going to a record store and finding a copy of Nebraska in the dollar bin, and I was just sort of like, well, yeah, I'll try it, what the heck, you know. I didn't know anything about it, had no idea it was like a record on a 4-track in his bedroom, and putting that on, and I was like, oh God, I get it. He's like really good, right? Like he like really writes songs. He's not just like singing cheesy patriotic songs that I, you know, didn't listen deeper for. So that was the point where I'm like, oh, okay, Bruce Springsteen, I trust him, I get it. All right. So he can do Dylan, you know, he can do real songs, and he can, you know, that's a great album. I think it's still probably, for me, along with, you know, Born to Run. And I do like his first two albums a lot, too. But, yeah, Nebraska was, like, great. And then I lost touch with him for a while, too, when he went into all that stuff, when he got rid of the band and all that. And then hearing Ghost of Tom Joad, I was like, oh, cool, this is like a West Coast version of Nebraska, right? So that got me back into him, where it's like, oh, okay, you know, I trust him again. So I'm like, okay, Bruce for life kind of thing. But, you know, the other thing is, you know, Dylan, I personally speaking for myself, I really like artists who really surprise me. You know, they I can't predict what they're going to do. Even if what they do isn't something I like to be surprised. I don't like to hear the first four notes of a song and know how it's going to end. Always like, you know, I'm a prog rocker at heart, you know, I like, you know, all the 20-minute songs about whatever, big synthesizer solos, and you have no idea, 11 movements to the song, like that's like a classical piece. But then I also like pop. But, you know, Dylan is just that enigmatic guy, and he'll go down these, you know, tunnels where you're like, where is he going? Like, you think he's lost his mind, and then all of a sudden, he'll come up with something, like a line, and you go, oh, God, it all comes into focus, and you're like, while he can still do it, because he's gone on tangents. In the 80s, he got pretty lost, you know, for a while. But then, you know, he'll come out with a thing like Infidels, which is a great album, you know. And then Oh Mercy, another really great album, just a total mood album, just amazing, but not like, hey, let's all go to the stadium and stomp our feet and, you know, evangelize the spirit of rock and roll, which is kind of what Bruce is. And kind of, you know, when I look at Bruce, as much as I like him, as much as I trust him, you know, I think where they really differ, Dylan is really off the cuff. He'll write a song, he'll like do two or three runs to it, and he'll play it different every time in the studio, and if it's not happening, he just throws it out and, I got another song, let's do this one. You know, whereas Springsteen, he just, you know, he refines and refines and refines and refines and refines, and then he refines it to the point where, like, every song is, you know, he's working on a transmission. Everett starts, it kind of ends up in the same place. Like, I'm every man, and I just got to get in my car and bust out of this town. You know, and it's like, you know, I wish he could be a little looser, because it's almost like, well, you know, like, that you take albums like Darkness on the Edge of Town, you take Nebraska, there's so much material there. And he refines and refines and refines. And a lot of times with Bruce, you know, his greatest songs, they don't make the album because they don't fit the final 10, you know, with the concept of the final 10. And so he's ditched amazing songs, and those are like the ones that I like, because it's like, well, he'd like, you know, like an early early demo, like, I think his tracks box set is fantastic because all this great stuff. It's like, you know, they did it, they were working the tunes, and parts would, like, end up in something else. But by the time they ended up in something else, they'd been so refined and smoothed over that maybe those earlier demos, earlier tracks like Iceman and all that kind of stuff makes a more exciting listen and a more satisfying listen than the finished album, which almost becomes kind of cliched in that the character that he's created, these kind of hopeless people that dream of getting out of town, but they never actually do. Whereas Dylan, I don't think, seems as tied down to that. He's just much more cerebral, and whatever happens goes. And yeah, it's not as focused, but then he'll hit a line that'll just kill you, and you go, oh God, that's why I listen to Bob Dylan. He's still got it, you know. It's just amazing things like that. Whereas Bruce, he does have great lines too, and he does, but he just really, really works it. You do see the sweat in Bruce. You see the sweat, the hard work that he puts in, but it tends to take out a lot of the spontaneity. It's maybe where he puts it back into the show, but like the records can almost seem like, wow, this would have been great if he'd have just loosened up a bit and maybe gone with his first instinct. I don't know. That's kind of where I see those two artists. There's the spontaneous guy who just doesn't care and doesn't always nail it, but he's like so iconic. But he nails it enough to where he always reminds you, yeah, I'm Bob Dylan. Whatever you think, I'm still here and I've got it. Doesn't go away. And Springsteen is like, you know, he still works really hard at it.
For the next one, we have to do, I want to make sure we suggest, all right, you're interested now in both these guys. What do you go to on iTunes or wherever at your library immediately? You know, like if you want to listen to it. You got to get five songs, your best shot, that would define what you want someone to listen to if you think this will get them into this artist.